Impressa o Anton. Será que dá tempo de mais um ataque? Middlesbrough é jogar no tumulto e ver o que dá. Dá por ali um Davi, girou um Davi. Ele pode empatar o jogo de forma fantástica. Rede! Gol! Tremendo de um Davi para empatar um jogo perdido pelo Stuttgart no último instante.
Welcome to Valve-based Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English-language Valve-based Stuttgart fan podcast where reviews are unofficial, uninformed, usually unprepared. This is episode 116. My name is Travis. You can reach me at Hazelfish. His name is Matt. You can reach him at Sail Racer. You can reach us at Valve Americana online at valveamericana.weebly.com. Matt, this is the 1,000th match that took place in the stadium in Konstadt. It's your 70th episode, and oh, by the way, it's also Easter. So many big events right now. I mean, which one of those is just top of that list?
I would like to say my 70th episode, but I think match 1000 just barely nudges me out.
And by the way, we're also so blasphemous here that we've been waiting all day to talk to each other, even though it's, I don't know, Easter Sunday in the States. So oh, I'll see you in hell, buddy. All right, part one, shout-outs. Congratulations, Valpe Bingo. Dan O'Hagan nailed it. That's three times this year. He got it with the aforementioned 1,000th match in the stadium. The Valpe Frauen, man, this is big. So they won last Sunday versus TSV Tengnong to maintain their first place in the Oberliga, and they won this weekend to advance to the Baden-Württemberg Pokal Final. The other thing that we haven't really talked about is the under-21 team, which plays in the regional league. They lost, so they're still in third place. In first place are the Stuttgarter Kickers, and second is Hoffenheim's second team. So the way it works is the number one team gets promoted to the third division. Nothing else happens. So if you finish second, congratulations, but that's all you get. What would you like to see here? Like the Stuttgarter Kickers make it, you know, because that's a traditional club? Or would you like to see our third team, you know, they're 5 points behind right now, get that bump up?
So this is in the third division?
No. So they're in the regional league. And there's five regional leagues, I believe, in Germany. And because of the number of clubs that are in the Baden-Württemberg area, they get an automatic promotion to the third division, which is a professional league.
So I'd like to see our boys get bumped up, because then we're getting better, higher quality experience for our young players. That's a better draw to bring young people in. And also forget you Kickers. Like, I don't know. I don't know anything about or have any animosity to the Kickers, but it'd be nice if we could get our team up. And the third division is as high as they can get, because you have to have a division between your first team and your second team. So let's maximize what we can do with Stuttgart.
No, it would be awesome to put some of the guys who can't get playing time with the first team but are too good for the regional team into the third tier. I mean, the last time they were up there was the same year that we were relegated the first time in the 2010s. Happily, they were relegated as well, so it all worked out for everybody that season. The Valve shop, you can get Dennis and Seiru's scarves, which I was going to talk about because that's a little weird, but I like how the shop now has a shop by player function. So you can see all the merchandise that is, you know, per player, which is basically just scarves for Seiru and Dennis at this point. But the new thing they had, I don't know if you saw it, was the warm-up kit with the black brew string for the 1,000th match recognition. Those are pretty sharp. So what are you going to get, a Seiru scarf, a Dennis scarf, or one of those pretty sweet black brew string warm-up kits?
Those sweet white and black kits they're sweet, and they're 45 euros versus a billion for the normal kits. So that's a bonus. And I don't, even though we live in the Midwest and we get winter here, I'm not a big scarf guy. So I think I'd go with the kit.
I like scarves. I'm not a big player scarf. I think that's a little, I like what they're doing, but especially after what we'll talk about today, they set a record for Stuttgart, but I think that's a little weird. That kit though looks pretty sweet. So I would probably add that to my 47,000 kits that I already have here. So save some space in the closet. OFC Fantasy, Valpy Cheesehead won. Village Footy, though, took over the lead. They've got less than a 10-point lead over Lucas Stott, who's been in charge all season long. Give Village Footy a listen and a watch on the YouTube. They do a great job. OFC Tip Spiel, I am Rob Holloway, won with 6 points, Matt. It was just a horrid week for predictions for everybody. I didn't even mention our pod predictions. The top winner, I think it was Austin, had 3. It was just a rough go for everybody, which kind of goes into the match here. We weren't able to put out our usual OFC newsletter or email on Discord or email or Facebook to get a vote. So you know what? Just like democracy in America, we're just going to make the decision ourselves, Matt. So I'm going to let you pick man of the match and I'll pick vice man of the match. What do you think?
I'm down. I like when I have ultimate firm control and rule with an iron fist. For my man of the match, I'm going to go with Angelo Stiller.
Ooh.
I thought he was absolutely stellar in the midfield. And the goal that he finally got was phenomenal. His assist to Girassi was just a like seeing eyeball. I don't know how he recognized that Seiru was there. But just next level play, and he was all over the pitch as per usual, strong in the defense. Great day for Angelo Stiller.
It's almost impossible to vote against him. For vice man of the match, I'm going to go with Dennis Undav. He was everywhere, played 98 plus minutes on this one, had some amazing passes, backheel passes, got a little bit greedy there in the second half, as we'll talk about, but more than made up for it in the last, you know, added time there. So Angelo Stiller and Dennis Undav, two men of the match here. So Matt, talking about the match, let's dive right into it. Part two. All right, so this is going to be a pretty weird episode. We were talking off the air, as they say, that we were just going to shoot from the hip. And we always joke about how we don't really prepare too much, but we do kind of take the 48-hour rule, 24-hour rule, where we kind of take some time to absorb what happened in the match. We read up on the Twitter machine, on Kicker, some of the various local news magazines in Stuttgart, so that when we make opinions, they're not our opinions and we're just copying what anybody else has said. We aren't taking that. For one, it's spring breaks, Easter week in the U.S., so we really don't have a lot of time to get together. Two, it was Easter today, so we were, doing family things. So it's not going to be our usual, dare I say, thoughtful episode, as much as it's going to be a pretty raw, emotional episode. So with that in mind, before we kind of try to break this down on a more granular level, what are your initial thoughts? What are we? It's 9:30 Eastern time here. So we're about 9 hours removed from the end result.
I felt really good about the first half. I feel like we let our foot off the gas in the second half, and that was the reason for all of everything. I think this result ultimately will be good for the team. I think getting 3 points out of this and getting within a point of Bayern would have been ideal, but we're still at a point where we can leapfrog them. And this is kind of a reminder of you guys aren't invincible, and you have to keep going full blast without getting too much damage. We've seen the last couple of games, the guys come out at the half and they're not quite in full blast. They get a little bit of a scare. Neubel bails them out. And then they go, oh, right, we still have half a game left to play. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that we can get this sorted. But the second half, oof, it was a rough go.
It was a very, I thought, my initial thought was, overconfident. We were just so dominating in that first half, and then we took our foot off the gas. And I don't know what Dennis Undav kind of said after the match, that people started playing selfish, they didn't really play together, they were kind of doing their own thing, including himself in that problem. But it seemed like that first half, everybody was playing together, they were having a lot of fun, and then they got that second goal, the crowd was cheering their song, we're going on a trip after all this. And the guys seemed to be having fun. We started doing a lot of back passes when maybe we shouldn't have done some back passes, heel passes and things like that. But I never thought we were going to lose this game. I legit went to the restroom when it was 2-2, and I was like, all right, we'll be okay. And I came back, and I thought somebody had paused the match because all of a sudden it's 3-2 Heidenheim. And I'm like, what is that? But then they showed a lot of resolve to pull it through. So it's an emotional game, and it was a really strange day-to-day for a lot of reasons we'll kind of get into. But I was really confident going into this one. I remember talking to Jake from 50 Plus Donor. He was like, whoa, you need to calm down. But and he was probably right, because we only had two wins and one draw in the five last matches we played these guys, but their form had dipped of late. We were all in black for this one. It was game 1000. The stadium finally opened up so that everybody could be in for the most part. The construction is pretty much done. The warm-ups were sweet. I just figured we'd play really well at home versus the way we played at Heidenheim. I really thought that first half was how we were going to play for the full 90. I mean, I don't know. I expected that. They delivered it. And then, just like me, they got so confident where they're like, yeah, we got this in the bag. We're good.
Yeah, I felt Undav's comment about guys playing selfish in the second half. Really, like, that makes a lot of sense to me. And it felt like people were trying to pad their stat line maybe a little bit and playing for that. Like, how do I get, you know, my pass ratio up or my tackles one ratio or get those shots on goal? You know, maybe there's incentives built into contracts that we don't know about that these guys are pushing for. Or maybe they're just trying to make a highlight reel and do something really cool. And like, that's great, but you've got to do it in service of the team. And it didn't feel like everybody was doing that in the second half.
Did you, when we get into the lineup, the only big lineup change this time was Ada sat. So he and Enzo were a little bit under the weather. So Enzo started, but Ada Karazor sat. So Mahmoud Dahoud came into the match. He only played about 60 some minutes, which I was a little surprised by, but the game had kind of shifted where they had to get a little more defensive at that point. I didn't see that big of a drop off, to be honest. I wonder if we'll see more of Dahoud going forward. I don't think we will, because the way the game trended, but he didn't look too bad the 60 minutes he was in there.
I thought Dahoud played great. It was, to my eyes, basically a seamless shift from Karazor to Dahoud, and that says a lot for him and his ability to fit in with this team. And that's kind of what we were hoping when he was signed, that he'd be able to be that filler for when Karazor needed a breath. And it looks like we've got that in him, which is a really good sign if we're playing European football next year.
Yeah, so he looked pretty decent when he was in there for the time he was in there. So the match to me is kind of epitomized by what happened in added time in two ways. One was Valdi Anton got a ridiculous yellow card. He was complaining about a call where he thought the ball went off the Heidenheim player, but it instead was called going off the Stuttgart player. We were down 3-2 at that point. He ends up getting his fifth yellow card, which means he is not going to be able to play against Dortmund next week, which, considering our depth at the center back position, is a huge loss. He just lost his cool. He lost his composure. On the flip side, the team never gave up. They had that great play with Dennis Undav where he was able to juke out two players, put the ball in the net, and the resolve this team showed to get a goal and get a point out of this and to see them celebrate. Like, Sabres celebrated like crazy for Dennis here. They were legit happy, but also disappointed. To me, that period from Waldy's yellow card to Dennis's, not even that, to their celebration in front of the curve, because these guys were pissed. They weren't happy with the result of this match. They knew they were lucky to come out with a point. To me, that 5 minutes really sums up this match.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Undav goal real quick, because just the amount of poise that he showed in a time where panic would have been totally understandable. And, you know, he could have easily launched the ball that first, right after he got the first touch and got it settled and put it right into a defender's face, and we'd have been in trouble. But he didn't. And that's one of the things we love about Undav, is that he can do this stuff and he maintains his composure. But yeah, I'm with you there. That last 5 minutes, I mean, that was most of the game. We controlled play. We made Heidenheim do what we wanted them to do. And then there was just that chunk there in the second half where we forgot how to Stuttgart.
You bring up a good point about a guy who's getting a little bit of heat because I mentioned it to you and Ted when we were texting, is like, I didn't really understand the sub, but it does make sense. It, when the game opened up, Silas, that is where he can really make a difference. And he came in and he made an immediate difference. You have to admit, he almost got the penalty called against him to get us a penalty kick. And then he had that miss that just hit off the bar. But then he had the opportunity to pass it to either an open Dennis or an open Seyrou, and he didn't do that. I was thinking when that long ball went to Dennis, he's only 5'10", and his holdup play was immaculate in that.
Yeah.
And I'm 5'10", Matt. And that's great. And then he was able to have the wherewithal to make that move, make a little bit of a fake, and then put it on target when people are just launching the ball over the place. Yeah, shout out to him. He played great. And that kind of ties in the first 60 minutes of this because it was just gorgeous play. So let's talk about some of the positive there is that Seyrou had a goal, VAR'd out, which I couldn't help but think of you at that point because I'm like, he is millimeters offsides. And I want the Matt rule where if you're any part onside, you should be able to be, because the Heidenheim guys weren't even complaining about it at that point. But then he gets just what was a gorgeous goal where everybody's passing it to each other. Then Stiller gets the goal that we just talked about. And I wound up at the Stiller goal again for a second because there was that bit where they were playing hacky sack at midfield and Stiller was part of it. And I think it was Ada and it was him and Ito. And then finally they got the ball loose and they were just so confident. And then finally Stiller got on the breakaway and just cleanly put it away. That was some of the prettiest, most gorgeous football. I mean, Dan O'Hagan, who did a great job making the call, just was just like, this is delicious is what we're watching. And at that point, when you're up 2-0, you're just like, how we're going to go 4-5. Oh, at this point, we're just crushing these guys. But that first 60 minutes, that was some beautiful football.
There are times when I'm watching a game that I think about my uncle, who's a huge sports fan. And like we go to Michigan football together and he loves a defensive American football game, which is functionally not much is happening.
Right.
So there's three plays and a punt and three plays and a punt. And he eats that up. But he thinks soccer is boring and I don't get it. And I keep trying to like have him give it a shot. And I look for games where I'm like, this is a game that would be good to show to Uncle Seth because this is exciting. And there were chunks of this game where I'm like, this is the one. I could just like, when he's here in the fall, I'll pop this one on the DVR. We'll be like, we're watching this game. And he's going to go, oh, okay, I get it now. Were it not for the second half collapse, like, yeah, the tiki-taka ball movement, the off-ball movement, the vision the guys were playing with, this most of this game was a thing of beauty from a Stuttgart standpoint.
Yeah, I before I leave on to the kind of next 30 minutes where things kind of fell apart a little bit, is that level of confidence that you see them play with is amazing. I listened to, it's called Rosin Funk. If anybody has a chance, they do a Bundesliga YouTube show. It's about an hour and a half and I had some downtime, i.e. a teacher work day where we didn't do anything. So I was able to watch the whole thing and you can translate it. And Benny Hoffman, who works for Kicker, kind of broke down how Stuttgart plays and just how they have all this open space, how Nubel draws them in, which is something we've talked about, that forces open space in the middle because they have to guard the wings because Chris Furich is just so fast on the one side. How Seyrou plays not as a classic nine all the time. He plays back as a 10. How Dennis Undav plays back as a 10 or an eight. How Angelo Stiller can go forward, but he can also play in the center back position. We've already talked about Valdi Anton. I'm sure somewhere Bruno Labbadia is like, right back. He can play right back. But you've got all of this flexibility where all these guys can play very confidently. And we saw the best of that today. And we also saw the worst of that today, where sometimes that confidence turned into overconfidence and arrogance, as Angelo Stiller once said. So, I mean, that Seyrou goal, for him to be in the right spot at the right time, that back heel pass that Dennis Undav had, I mean, come on. That was amazing stuff.
That was a gutsy play, too, to have the confidence in poise, be like, nah, watch this. That's going to work. Just yeah. Unreal. And like you said, Undav's all over. He's doing things in different roles. That guy is playing so, so well right now.
Yeah. And it was great to see Siller get that goal. His celebration was one of just exuberance. Like, finally, I did. It was one of the downsides to today, among other things, is just, it would have been awesome had they got the W, because Angelo Siller, it would have been a really special moment, for him. And it's hard to root against that guy. The last 30 minutes, though, everything that we just talked about went from confidence to overconfidence, from being playful to being arrogant, to use their words. Dennis used that word, today. Those back heel passes turned into turnovers. And let's talk about one of the big turnovers was the play of Alex Neubel. It was funny because when he had that gap, so it was a relatively easy save. He had some Vaseline on his gloves or whatever. It went in as an own goal. A lot of people immediately on Twitter I saw said, uh-oh, this could be like the Leipzig match where he had that one goof and then the rails fell off. And it looked like the rails fell off after that point. I mean, the announcer, whoever was doing the color commentary besides Dan O'Hagan, mentioned it numerous times that, like, he does not look confident anymore. He's being way too passive at this point. And sure enough, it seemed like it got into his head a little bit, which is really odd because one of the things that he's been really good for this year is just kind of bouncing back. Just kind of, gave up a goal, I'm going to bounce back. Didn't look like that today, though.
No, he definitely started to struggle, and I'm hopeful. He's a young guy. He's been playing in a Bayern Munich system where he's behind Manuel Neuer, and whichever overpaid backup is sitting behind Neuer, chomping at the bit to get in. So he's probably been in a position throughout his career where he's just, like, any mistake could mean you're never going to make it. And so I think if Honus sits him down and says, "Hey man, you need to just chill out a little bit. Okay. You're going to make mistakes and we understand that. And that's okay. The important thing is recovering from those mistakes and showing that resiliency. And we believe in you. And that's why we're keeping you out there and why you're going to play the next game and the one after that and the one after that, because you're our guy," that maybe he'll settle in a little bit and show some of that mental fortitude. Maybe he doesn't have it. I don't think that's the case. We don't have any reason to think that that's the case. But I don't know. I'm hopeful this is just a little bit of inexperience and youth coming to the surface. And this was the last of that we'll see of it from Neubel, because he's too good to let something like this derail him.
Yeah, the knock on him when he was at Monaco before he came to Stuttgart was that he would play really high level, and then he would play really low level. There was no consistency with him, and that was his big problem. And he's been nothing but consistent this year, but for two games, really. The Leipzig game in the second half, and then this game in the second half. So he bounced back before. Hopefully he can bounce back again. Another guy who really could have had a bounce back game today was Silas. He came in. I questioned the substitution when he came in. I was wrong. He was a difference maker. That game was wide open, and that game was perfect for him. The problem was the same problem we've seen before. He wasn't able to finish. He wasn't able to make that pass that he needed to make. He was a bit of a turnover machine. There's a lot of people who are saying that once this season is over, maybe Silas's time in the Brustring will be over. I don't really think that's true, because we're playing Europe next year. We're going to need depth. Silas is a Bundesliga quality player for sure. I think he's a streaky Bundesliga player. I think he's somewhat one-dimensional at this point, which is fine. But he's not Tanguy Koulibaly, who we sometimes compare him to, where he's just kind of all over the place. But it's just funny how a couple millimeters or inches here or there can almost define you. Is had he made that one shot, or had he slowed up just enough to get fouled, or had he made that pass, all of a sudden we're talking about super subs he lost. And so right now we're talking about, I don't know if I want to see this guy in crunch time against Silas.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, because we're all aware of the history with Silas and how much he's been through, and he's got such love from the Stuttgart fan base. Just want to see him get over that hump of not getting in his own way, and he's just having a hard time doing that. How nice would it be if he was able to spend some time with Gerassi over the summer and just be like, "Hey dude, how are you such a consistent finisher?" And get that sorted. But I mean, even if he's nothing but a rocket out there for 30 minutes for us, there are going to be teams that we're playing next year and in Europe where that's going to be a much needed skill, and having him as an option to do that is huge.
It's funny you mention that, because even when times were, I don't want to say bright, but where his star was much brighter, that was kind of where we always came back to, is his best role with this club might be as a 60-minute super sub, where he pops on around 60-minute mark and his speed is just that much faster because everybody's that much more tired. Maybe he hasn't changed that much as our expectations have changed. I mean, maybe it's not so much on him a little bit, but let's talk about one of the things that has changed. That last 8 minutes, the guys rallied. They never gave up. I do want to chat about that. The amount of resolve they showed. I was excited for a couple of runs. Obviously, whenever you can win a point on a last second play, it's impossible not to get, you know, pumped up for that, especially when you do it at home. And the way that Dennis kind of celebrated, pointed to the crowd, the way the guys, you know, were so happy for him, but also the way the team, as we mentioned before, was not happy. They were upset that this was a 1 point game. They lost 2 points in their mind. I love the fact they never gave up. I like the fact they weren't going bonkers celebrating, but like they had just won, you know, something, because they didn't. So there's a lot to be happy about there. Their resolve, and I think the reality is setting into them, is that, and then his post-match interview, you know, Dan O'Hagan had to apologize because he said a couple of bad words in the interview there. None of those guys seem too happy about the match. Honus said afterwards, is like, you know, we seem too happy. The crowd was happy. They were singing their songs, and that's okay, but we have to stay on task, and they didn't. So I do want to give them some credit for getting their act together, saving a point when it looked like we had just lost three, and getting this thing across the finish line a little bit, but also realizing they barely got this across the finish line.
Yeah, I'm with Honus. It's like, take a breath, be like, okay, it's good that we got a draw. That's better than a loss, but also, this was not acceptable. And this is kind of that next level that we want to start seeing, where they expect to win, they expect to do well. It's not like, oh wow, we got a point out of that, cool. That's where we were a year ago. Yeah. And it's not that team anymore, and we want to see them behaving like they expect to win games against Heidenheim.
The one thing I do want to wrap up here with, and when we talk about the match, is kind of the elephant in the room. So it was supposed to be everybody dressed in black today for the match. That's what the Ultras put out. And if you watched the game, you realize not everybody was dressed in black. The curve was, and they let out some black smoke when Seiru scored the goal that was ultimately ruled out of VAR. So let's talk about that for a second. So initially, I thought Dennis's celebration, where he kind of pointed to the crowd and said, hey, I can't hear you, was something to do with maybe he realized there was a bit of a protest going on based on all the front office stuff and that the home crowd wasn't cheering as much. I do believe there was about a 10-minute period where they were kind of quiet when the match started, and then they got into it. I don't know how much of that is accurate or just looked like it at the time. But what I'm starting to notice is there does seem to be a split between the curve and the crowd, between the Ultras and the, how should I say it, the weekend supporter as to what's going on. We'll talk a little bit more in the second half about some of the more, the drama taking place in the upper management. You know, we talked about that last week, but it does seem like, how should I say this? The upper management drama is impacting the game day experience. I don't want to say it's impacting the guys on the pitch, because they were up 2-0. They were down 3-2, not because of anything the curve did. I don't want to say it like that.
Yeah.
But I do think everything that's going on upstairs is having an impact on what's happening with the 60,000 people in the stadium. And you're starting to see this weird thing about where I'm a fan. No, I'm a better fan. I dress in black. No, I dress in white and red. And that's the part that's starting to get a little bit weird. And that's why I don't know if it's tangible, but I do think that stuff is starting to impact the game day experience a little bit. And these guys have thrived at home. Mm-hmm. They have thrived with home support. And maybe I am trying to connect a square, you know, dot to a round, you know, hole here, and it doesn't add up. But it does seem like this isn't great for what we need these last seven matches.
It feels a little bit like now that we're winning consistently, we can use our energies to make our points about other things. Like last year, relegation scrap, I don't think anybody in the Ultras would have dreamed of using a game like this as an opportunity to make a point. The outcome on the field was too important. Now we're safe. We're probably safe for European football even. There's an opportunity to be grumpy about other things. And I think that's a little bit what we're seeing. There's a little bit of a gatekeeper thing here that I don't care for. You know, if you're going to go to the game and you're going to dress in all black as part of the protest, good on you. I applaud you for doing it. But somebody who's not paying attention necessarily to all that stuff and just wants to go and root for the local football club, or whose friend brought them as a treat for the game, or, you know, whatever it may be, you know, let them be and let them enjoy the experience. And, you know, if they have a good time, maybe they'll become one of the ultras or one of the big time supporters, and your numbers will swell and the influence will grow. But if you call them out for not being true fans, you're just going to alienate people and ostracize people and split the fan base. And that's not good for anybody.
Yeah. And this is definitely something that's really tough for us, being thousands of miles away, you know, trying to give voice to a club, to, you know, the people in the States who have been to 1, 2, 5 matches, maybe, you know, in their lives, as opposed to the people that are there every weekend for a home match or go there, you know, multiple times a year. So it's always difficult for us to criticize anything that happens in the stadium. So I'm very hesitant to say anything really negative. I kind of agree with you that the last 2 years, this probably wouldn't have happened. On the flip side of this, I realize how important the 50+1 situation is to pretty much everybody, but especially the hardcore supporters, and how they've often said, listen, the results matter a lot less than what, you know, is happening with my club. And so I'm torn on this one. This is a quick case where I kind of wish we would have had more time to prepare for this so I could come up with a better response, because it's just interesting to see the game day experience change a little bit. And we're overanalyzing it now to argue that it had an impact on what happened on the pitch. I don't know how true that is, but it was a little different. It was a little off, and it's just not what we're used to seeing. But I could easily see somebody sitting in the curve who's listening to this going, well, exactly. You're not there. You don't know. This is bigger than one season. And we need to fight for what we need to fight for. So this is, boy, I wish I had a better response. I could get off the fence on this one. I'm glad.
Well, I guess I'd just say to the supporters, the ultras there in the curve, is make your point, and nobody's telling you not to make your point. Just please don't take it out on the casuals.
Yeah.
Like, you will be heard by management, even if the casuals aren't on board with what you're doing, because people recognize that you all are the ones who show up to the board meetings. You all are the ones who vote. You're the ones who are putting pressure on the board. Like, you have that voice, use it. Please do. We're counting on you. Like, you're doing that for the rest of us who can't. But also, like, leave little Gunter and, you know, and Johannes, who are just, you know, 10-year-olds there for a fun weekend out with their dad. Like, let them be. And they're going to have fun. And as long as we're all cheering for Stuttgart, that should be good enough for that day.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to imply anything weird is going on. I just do think there is, at least on social media, there's this, you know, I'm more of a fan than you are type of fan. And it's very impossible for you and I to be like, well, no, I'm a much better fan in Cleveland than you are in, oh, Stuttgart.
Well, we all know that social media brings out the best in everybody.
Touche. Well said. I guess the only thing I would say before we move on is that even after the match, Dennis Undav said the reason why he reacted the way he did to the curve when he scored the game-tying goal, where he kind of put his hand up to his ear, like, I can't hear you, was he thought that the crowd had let off, that after about the 94th minute mark or so, he thought they stopped cheering and supporting the guys, and he wasn't used to that. And he was upset about it, he said. And he said later that he overreacted. He was just so upset with the way that the guys played. I think Dennis is a pretty smart player. I don't think he just says things without thinking about them. So I kind of thought about that a little bit. And I thought, okay, maybe the stuff that is happening up above and with the crowd is more you and me looking at it as opposed to the guys on the pitch. Because how many footballers actually care what's going on with, you know, upper management nonsense as much as, you know, as long as the crowd is cheering? And like we said before, it wasn't because the crowd wasn't cheering at certain points that they let up a 2-goal lead to go down 3-2. So I do want to take this back a notch that we're talking about all the impact this probably had on the game, where had these guys just put a goal away or finished up, you know, playing the way they should have, you know, this isn't even a talking point.
It's probably more Dennis doing a don't lose faith. Come on, keep it up.
Yeah.
We're still pushing. We need you to still push too, than anything else. And I agree with you. He seems to be a very thoughtful, very smart guy. And maybe he made it a little bigger than he intended to.
Yeah.
But I think it was an intended shot for a purpose. And that's okay.
Yeah, and if anybody's got some gravitas to do that right now, which is Dennis Hundov and Seiru Garassi, yeah, they just broke the record for most tandem goals in a season for a Stuttgart pair at 38. Alwager, who has the all-time record goals for Stuttgart, and some guy named Jürgen Klinsmann, who hey, some people might know, had the old
never record. Heard of him.
Right. Who's that guy? Something at 37. So, I mean, they have just had an amazing season together. Let's get into the final thoughts from reality. I mean, we have 17 points out of the possible 21 against teams since we came back from the break. So we're talking about Darmstadt. We're talking about Mainz, Cologne, Wolfsburg, Union, Hoffenheim, and now Heidenheim. Okay, those aren't world beater teams, right? And I think almost all those teams are in the bottom nine. But how many times have we talked about Stuttgart struggling against bottom nine competition? Not this year. So if you look at the big picture versus the small picture, the last seven matches versus this one, and even in this one, there's still a lot to be happy about. This has been a heck of a run. This has been a heck of a 2024.
Yeah, if you think about it, a year ago, we would have been saying, these are the games we absolutely have to win. And if, you know, we're not going to win any of the other ones, so we absolutely have to beat these bottom of the table teams. And now it's, we expect to beat them. And honestly, we kind of expect to beat the top of the table teams too. So it's a phenomenal run. 17 out of 21 possible points is unbelievable. It's fantastic. And we're allowed to be disappointed in the result today. Mm-hmm. This is a team we should have beat. But I was saying a couple weeks ago, not to pat my own back, but this Heidenheim match was going to be a dangerous one. Coming off the international break, they're a dangerous team. A draw is not bad, really, against them. These guys are better than I think a lot of people give them credit for. And we didn't really play all that bad. A little bit of a let off. And I think it'll be an opportunity for some attitude correcting in the locker room by Honus.
I think that's the other thing is we moved on from the match, but this team Heidenheim is really good at the one thing we're not really good at, which is defending crosses, especially with how many guys have gone down now. Dan Axel, Anthony Rouault, now Anton next match. And the announcers made a really good point during the game is like, they don't score much from crosses, but what they do is they create corner kicks from crosses, and that's where they get their plays from. And they knew what they were going to try and do, and they did it really well. But you mentioned is that we expect to win against the bottom tier teams, but we expect to win against the top tier teams. And that's what's coming up. So if we look at the upcoming schedule, we got April, we got a big match against Dortmund on Saturday. Then we've got Frankfurt, which is always tough. Then we're at probably a team we should win, but who knows what's going to happen with Werder Bremen. Then we've got the big match against Bayer Leverkusen. Then we go into May, we've got Bayern Munich and Augsburg. Then we wrap it up with Gladbach. I mean, the table after this one, we're still in third place with 57 points, everybody. Fourth place, Dortmund got that big, surprising win in my book over Bayern Munich. So they're at 53. So now we're only 4 points ahead of them. Fifth place, this is where we got a little lucky, is Leipzig only got a draw against relegation-threatened Mainz. So they're at 50 points in sixth place. Who cares at this point? So we've got 3, 4, and 5. I mean, final thoughts, Matt. It was definitely 2 points lost, but it was at least a point gain. We're 7 points up on Leipzig, and that seems to be what's most important right now.
The only real disappointing part of this is that we had an opportunity to get within a point of Bayern Munich for second place because Dortmund took it to them. And gosh, it would be really cool to be within a point of Bayern with an opportunity to leapfrog them when we play them in a couple weeks. That opportunity is gone, but that was a nice, would have been a nice little feather in the cap. It doesn't impact the bigger goals, which is finish in the top four or five, make it to European football, and just continue this run of absolutely phenomenal play.
Yeah. So all in all, big picture, it was some pretty good stuff. So why don't we move on to some news and cues in part three here. Look at some other big stuff. All right, here we go. News, national team. So since we last talked, the guys who were selected for the national team, so Dennis Undav, Valdi Anton, Chris Furch again, and Maxi Mittelstadt got to play against both France and against the Netherlands. The German national team went 2-0 in those. Maxi Mittelstadt started twice and got a goal against the Dutch. Chris came on as a second-half sub in both of those in what I thought was a super classy move by Nagelsmann. Both Dennis Undav, but especially Valdi Anton, played late in the win against France in the first one. I mean, there were some other guys who were on international duty during that time period, but that was just a great experience for all of them. It was awesome to see all four of them play against France. I don't know how many of those guys are actually going to make the team. Do you want to take a stab on that?
All four of them.
I got to think two are a lock. I think Mittelstadt is a lock. I thought he played really well as the match went on. I think you could make an argument that he had a little bit of responsibility for that first goal that the Dutch scored, but he had a banger of a goal to get them back in it. And he really got into both matches as the game went on. Chris Furch is just a great late game sub who just has so much pace. I don't know how you don't take Dennis Undav, because you're just, the way that he's playing is both a nine, but also as a 10, making plays, but also assisting those plays. I think Valdi Anton's the outside looking in, or the inside looking out. I'm not sure how that goes. So I would say three of those guys for sure. I know there's been some talk about Angie Stiller, but I would say three at this point. I don't know if all four or five can make it though.
I can see all four because you're going to go through the rest of the season and more guys are going to get more game on film. And so there's going to be more to talk about. If Stuttgart keeps rolling, the noise for getting the Stuttgart guys on the national team is going to grow and grow. If Bayern keeps stumbling the way that they have been, some of the other big teams keep stumbling, that noise is just going to increase. And Undav and Stiller and Furich and Maxi Fiddlesticks, they're all going to have an opportunity to make a case for themselves. And Voldemort Anton just continuing to play well, continuing to be an anchor on one of the best teams in Germany, is that's all he can do to make his case to be on the national team. The one disappointment, I agree with you, it was nice to see the guys get time late against France. One of my frustrations continually with friendlies like this, when they bring in guys that are maybe borderline players, is they don't play them.
You're right.
It's like, how do you know if the guy's got it or not if you don't give them some time? And yeah, it's nice to get some time at the end, but give them 30 minutes, man. Let's see what they got. It's a friendly. It doesn't matter if you lose, especially in a friendly that you're playing well against. If it bombs in the end, you can say we were trying some stuff so that we're ready for when it matters.
Yeah, if I'm that one Hoffenheim fan in the United States, I'm pretty upset that Bayer didn't get in that two match series. He's having a lights out year for them as a striker. But then part of me is like, well, maybe he's a kid, so they're kind of, he's going to have his time. But then Nagelsmann was putting in new players because he needs results now. So I don't know. I wish we would have seen more of Dennis Undav. Like, I think Valdi Anton is an anchor guy, exactly what you said. I don't think he's a guy who's going to play a lot of minutes against international competition, but I think he's a guy who's great for the locker room, great for practice. He's going to push people. Dennis Undav just has it. He is lightning in a bottle right now. And it would have been really neat to see him play 15, 20 minutes instead of just, 10 minutes. Cause against France, he had one or two touches and they were pretty impressive, to get going. So this gets into the next question of rumors. So there's rumors about Chris Furich now and everybody. He's got about a $24 million release clause if Stuttgart makes the Champions League. But Bayern Munich has got, who he's linked to, a ton of players at his position. Dennis Udon says he wants to play in Stuttgart again, but Stuttgart's going to have to make the Champions League to be able to afford him. Alex Neubel, who had a rough game today, is getting interest from Italian and Spanish leagues. Of all of those guys, let's stick with the four guys, though, that made the German national team. Of those four, let's narrow it down to three. You got Dennis, you got Chris, you got Maxi. Which of those three do you think Stuttgart, you just wish they would hold on to next year?
Do I have to pick one?
I'll make it easier for you. Chris or Dennis? Because I think Max is definitely here for the next year. I think Valti's definitely there. Chris signed the extension, but he's getting a lot of attention.
I think Undav is more important because I think Leveling is a potential Furich replacement at a high level. I don't think he's quite as good as Furich is right now, but I think he could be. And we just don't have anybody who can finish the way that Undav and Gerassi can.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going Dennis in this one. I love what Chris has done. And he scored a lot of goals and had a lot of assists, but we've gone through patches in our recent fandom where we just can't score goals and you got to have a guy. And Dennis is streaky, but he can put the ball in the back of the net, just like we saw today. Let's go with our other news here is drama. So the last time we talked about all the stuff that was going on between the club and the AG that runs the soccer team, between the president of the club and the AG. So if you want information on that, listen to, you know, last episode a little bit. But here's what we got. So since then, the Cannstatter Curve called for the EV to resign. So for Klaus Boat, the president, for Adrian, the vice president, and Wright Mueller, the kind of third in command, and for the AG to reappoint a new president of the EV to be in charge of the supervisory board. Klaus refused and said, nope, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'll let the membership decide when I should go away, when my term is up, which isn't right now. It's not this summer. It's not for a couple of years. He did let in some information about what happened with Porsche. So here's what he said. Well, you couldn't do anything right in the situation. The pressure was enormous. Either the entry of the dream partner that was presented to us failed, especially because of me, and VFB continues to be in major economic difficulties, or I sign a declaration that is non-binding but can later be used as a means of pressure if the candidacy he describes arises. Today, I know this is a mistake. What he's referring to is that Porsche admitted that they had put in almost a demand that as part of them joining, Klaus Vogt would step away as the president of the AG, of the supervisory board. So Porsche admitted it. Klaus said this happened. Now, Porsche said this didn't happen as a last second thing. Klaus said it did, and that's where the time pressure happened. The remaining members of the board, so Adrian and Reitmuller, who were elected by the EV, called for peace. But Reitmuller was accused of being part of a fan scene that called for Klaus to resign, but Adrian and Reitmuller should stay on. And this is where it gets super complicated. There was a PDF document versus a Word document, and Reitmuller was seen as being one of the authors of the document because of the way certain things were saved. So Porsche then stated, like I said, that Klaus has to go because he's lousy. Nobody wants to do business with him. Verrill then came out and said he's never experienced something like what Klaus Vogt did. So Verrill is taken aside. Then there was a super awkward picture of Klaus Vogt and Alex Verrill up in the stands today during the match. I mean, if you didn't listen to our last episode, 115, you have no idea what I'm talking about right now. But if you are a Stuttgart supporter, you have too much of a clue what we're talking about. It is getting deeper and darker every day as opposed to being more blatant and light. Any comments on this one, Matt? I dare you. What do you got?
It's a mess.
I know.
I will say one thing just to bring a little levity to all of this. I found it a little disturbing that Heidenheim had MHP as their shirt sponsor, and we play in MHP Arena. You know, hey, MHP, pick a side. what are you doing? Are you with us or are you against us? Come on.
Who is, yeah, and Porsche's owned by Volkswagen, which is Wolfsburg. What's happening everywhere? It's getting crazy here. Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with any of this. It's like I said, I listened to the Rosin Funk podcast, which is awesome. If you want more info on this, Benny Hoffman is just a great resource for this. He writes for Kicker. He actually wrote a book called Capital or Curve. It's a history of VfB Stuttgart and the drama that has taken place throughout the history of this club. So basically what he says is this is nothing new. This happens, unfortunately, all the time here. So it's just more drama. We'll try to keep you appraised of what's going on with this. But at this point, as Matt said, it's a mess. Nothing has been settled. There's no segue.
Just to save our couple of car guy listeners, you said Porsche is owned by Volkswagen. Porsche is not owned by Volkswagen. Oh. You're thinking of Audi.
Oh.
Audi is owned by Volkswagen. But I know there is somebody out there who's a petrolhead like myself who is screaming, Porsche is not owned by Volkswagen.
Isn't Porsche, doesn't Volkswagen and Porsche have like some combined stake in something though that makes them like cousins or something?
Maybe, but like the big one is Audi. Audi is a wholly owned subsidiary of Volkswagen. So people that drive Audis, if you really want to piss them off, ask them how their VW's running. and they get real fired up about that. But I'm sympathetic a little bit to everybody involved. Like Porsche is an ideal sponsor to bring in. Having Mercedes and Porsche, you know, that's like being in Detroit and having Ford, GM, and Chrysler all backing your organization. This is what we're talking about here. So it makes a lot of sense. It just feels like the way that this was done was very behind closed doors, and a lot of things happened and nobody's really clear on who did what when, and everybody's kind of pointing the finger at everybody else, which makes me think that nobody's really been totally above board and there's plenty of blame to go around.
I think that's the one common theme here, is that you could say, okay, that was pretty crappy of you, Porsche, to come in and say, listen, we demand that the president of the EV is no longer in charge of the supervisory board, that he can't run the meetings and, you know, dictate money and all that stuff, when you know all that was promised in 2017 when we did the spinoff. On the other hand, why wasn't this announced at some point sooner? I get that you wanted Porsche to come in if you're Klaus Vogt, but at some point you've got to break the news to the membership that, hey, this is part of the deal. And you're just kind of waiting and waiting and waiting. So I think everybody's kind of innocent. Everybody's kind of guilty. And this is where I do agree with the curve, is like at some point, whether the general meeting's in July or it's in September, you also got to just clean house and start over. And, you know, that's sad. You don't want to see anybody lose their job on this, but it's a mess.
It is a mess, and it's unfortunate because it feels like a lot of people were probably trying to do the right thing, but were worried about perceptions and about blowback of things. And because of that, they took unnecessary steps to keep things in the dark in an effort to protect people. And it's blown up on them and backfired. And it's just a reminder that, you know, honesty is the best policy. Put it up in the open, be upfront with what you're doing. And, you know, all you had to say is, hey, look, we've got to do this because we really need this investor. This is an important long-term strategic partner. So we're going to make this concession because it's important for the betterment of the club. There you go.
It's funny. I keep mentioning the Benny Hoffman thing. And I wish it was just more accessible to people, because he basically says exactly what you said, is that on the one hand, you have Klaus Vogt on that side, who's like, we need the money. This is an amazing investor. We've got to put our egos aside and have this come in, but we're not happy with how this is going on. But on the other side, you have Porsche, who is putting in all this money, who are used to having control and say as to how that money is going to be dictated and be spent, and how there's not necessarily anybody who's wrong as much as there's a lot of egos, and those egos aren't allowing for a lot of actual, hey, what should we do? What's, you know, for the best of the club. But we'll keep you apprised of what's going on, and Maybe we'll tell you who owns Honda next episode or something like that. Let's get to some questions. We didn't send an email out to anybody, so I'm going to jump on the Twitter machine here real quick and see what we got, Matt. So Village Footballer, they ask, are you worried that in two games versus Heidenheim, we've seen rather opened up on crosses and set pieces? Maybe this is just a knee-jerk reaction. I don't think so. I think that's the downside to this club right now is one of our big weaknesses is set pieces and crosses. It was a little bit before Dan Axel was out. It's definitely been since he's been out. I don't think that's a knee-jerk reaction. I think that's probably the book on us is you want to play us in open play, that's going to be tough. But if you get a set piece against us, advantage you.
Yeah, that's definitely a fair concern. And we have to mitigate that issue by getting out to the passer faster and utilizing the team speed, because we don't have somebody like Daxo who can dominate aerially like he was before he got hurt.
Yeah. Kai Guy says, disappointing after an almost perfect first half. Yes, indeed. When you're leading 2-0 at home, you just don't let it slip away. It's a shame for Stiller. It could have been his day. One more shout out for Stiller. That guy played fantastic today. Just 5 stars for him.
Totally.
Wait. 1 star, right? 5 stars is bad in German rankings. Whoops. Sorry, Angelo.
Is it?
Well, kicker. Yeah. You know, it's 6 is.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Ah, geez. We ruined your
no
day.
No stars.
Yeah. Sarah says, Val B doing Val B things. Yes and no. I mean, like that Val B things would be them losing 3-2. This is different. Yeah. You know, they came back. So, Sarah, I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
Here's the difference, Sarah. Old Valfe, that first goal goes in, Neubel drops that ball, and everybody on the team puts their head down for a second, picks it back up, acts like they're back in it, but mentally they're going, here we go again. Mm-hmm. The team now, they're like, oh crap, we can still do this.
Jeremy on website says, at least they're never boring. 100%. Going back to what you said earlier, Matt, is that if you want to broadcast the Bundesliga to an everyday just person, have them watch a Stuttgart game. Because this was, listen, as a neutral, this was a great game. As a supporter of either side, this is a great game. So, I mean, no, boring they are not.
Absolutely. If anything, we're getting more excitement out of this team than we have in ages. And the only boring part was where they kind of shut down for 30 minutes in the second half. But as a neutral, if you're not super invested, you're going, oh, wow, the other team's coming back. That's interesting.
Please clap 420 says, oh, well, 57 points above 40. So referring to the fact that 40 is a magic number to not be relegated. I mean, that's what we talked about earlier, right? Is big picture. This has been such a crazy successful season. We've only had 2 draws in 2024, 7 wins and 2 draws. I mean, I think that's a great thing to just put it back into perspective. None of us expected this. There were going to be mild setbacks. And if a mild setback is us getting a 98-minute draw, okay, I'll take it.
As far as setbacks go, that's pretty solid.
And the last one is, oh, okay, never mind. Boobs in profile. So, I think, well, not answer well, that
what's
one.
That profile look like, Travis?
Well, time to move on there. All right, let's go to part 4. Smash. All right, part 4. We are on the road at Dortmund here. So odds and predictions, third place hosting fourth place, 57 points, I think, versus 54 points. And they just beat up on Bayern. Leipzig is, I believe, at Freiburg. So that's the other match that's important to us. So we beat Dortmund twice in the first half of the season. Seiru and Silas scored in the Pokal, and then Dennis and Seiru scored in the Bundesliga match. It is the top spiel on Saturday next week, 12:30. They need this game pretty bad because their schedule is pretty rough going forward. They've got Leipzig coming up. They've got Atletico Madrid twice in the Champions League. We're going to be missing Valdi Anton going into this one, and we're pretty weak at the depth when it comes to the center back position. Give me your thoughts going into this one, because I was pretty optimistic before the Heidenheim match started. I'm a little less optimistic now.
I think this will be a get right game, and I can't believe I'm saying we're going to have a get right game against Dortmund. But it's a team that plays a little more the style of football that we want to play. They're a little more open. Heidenheim is a bus parker, and we've had problems with that. We were able to unlock them today, which is nice. And we've been seeing that more of the season that we're able to unlock those. But Dortmund, I think, plays a little into our favor. And then my buddy, who's a big Dortmund supporter, who I was texting with yesterday when they beat Bayern, he said, the sad thing is next week we will entirely implode against you. And his expectation as a longtime Dortmund supporter is just that they have these super high highs and then they are immediately followed by super low lows. And he doesn't think that they can hold up against our attack.
Ooh, well, from his mouth to Fritzl's ears, here's hoping, because outside of Niklas Füllkrug on crosses, because he's a classic number nine, that's, I'm just so scared of crosses now. And I don't know who's going to take Valdi's spot, because Anthony Rouault is still a few weeks away. Dan Axel is not coming back till next season at this point. So do you move Ada Carazor back to center back? Do you play Ito in the center? And then you've got three at the back with, I mean, it's going to take some wizardry on Honus's part to figure that defense out.
Yeah. You can move Fagner on from right back into the middle and put Pascal Stenzel out on the right back, but that is not usually a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to be some kind of 3-4-3, 3-5 something combination where you got Stiller kind of helping to roam around and protect a little bit. It'll be interesting because Dahoud's going back home to where he had, you know, some of his success playing for Dortmund. See how that match goes there, but it's gonna be huge because Dortmund needs it bad. We need it to kind of get off the schneid a little bit of that draw there. I think the guys are gonna go in feeling a little angry. I think it is crazy what you said. It is a bit of a get right game, and this is probably a better opposition for us in the way that we play right now. What do you think the odds makers have this one? We're on the road going to the yellow wall.
I'm gonna say they're either giving Dortmund a half or they're calling it a pick 'em.
Oh no, Stuttgart for the first time in a long time is the underdog by half a goal in this one. So underdog on the road makes sense a little bit. They just came off that
seems
big
win. Reasonable.
Yeah. So what do you think the result of this one's gonna be?
I'm going to say 2-1 Stuttgart. I think Dortmund will get one early on a cross, and then we'll get it on lockdown, score right before the end of the half, again, halfway through the second, and cruise to victory.
Yeah, for the most part, these have been pretty low-scoring affairs. I'm going to take the opposite, unfortunately. I think I'm going to go like a 3-2 loss for the good guys. I really worried about Valdi Anton missing in the back. The good news, like I've told everybody, is that my predictions have been absolute garbage all season long. I've been last place in our overall Bundesliga predictions. I'm in last place in our Stuttgart predictions. So it wouldn't surprise me if the guys figure a way to step up and make up for what happened against Heidenheim with a big win against Dortmund. So Matt, that is it for this episode. Any final thoughts as we wrap up really what has been a great first 2-3 months of the second half of the season?
Just stay on the hype train, everybody. Continue to remember that this is a fairy tale season for us. And even though we burped a little bit here against Heidenheim, team's rolling. We're moving in the right direction. Life is beautiful.
Let's keep on that train, everybody. So we'll hopefully we'll talk to you next week after another big Valpy win, this time on the road at Dortmund. Matt, it was great talking to you. Happy Easter, buddy.
You too, Travis. Thanks.
Most of the Stuttgart fans are going to be tucking into the Mauertaschen with glee tonight. If you're wondering what a Mauertasche is, it's a culinary speciality of this region. Southwestern German dumpling. And if you're not a fan of Mauertaschen, then always look for Spätzle, which is the southwestern German variety of pasta. I must confess to being a bit more of a Spätzle man myself. But do give the Mauertasche a try if you come here.